Friday afternoon. It is the 1st of May, a great sunny day here in Georgia. I just got back from a week in Louisville, Kentucky, where my organization put on a conference. It was my first one. We had record attendance and a bunch of fun, including some parties like most good HR conferences. And so if I sound a little funny, it's because I've been talking all week. Our guest today is Andrew Gadomski from Aspen Advisors. Hey, Andrew, how's it going? Thanks for being on the show today.
Well, thank you, Michael. I appreciate the invitation, and it's going really good. Here in southern New Jersey, it's a little bit colder than I would like, but definitely spring has sprung here, and it's a good time.
Good, yeah. It's nice to not have to get up every day and wonder what the weather's, I mean, you know, rain and all that, but wondering whether it's going to be freezing outside. So,
right.
Listen, Andrew, why don't you, for those folks who don't know who you might be and what you do, can you give us your bio and kind of tell us what your business, which is Aspen Advisors, does, and then we'll get into some of the drive-through questions and a little discussion.
Sure. Aspen Advisors is a human resources consultancy. We're based out of New York, and what we do is we work with large-scale outsourcing providers in the HR space, technology providers in the HR space, academia, and industrial and industry organizations that cater to the HR space. And we help those organizations through data analytics become much more effective and efficient for their downstream customers. So we do work on efficiency and effectiveness and improvement with very large employers, whether, you know, usually in excess of 10,000 employees each. But most of our clients are those outsourcing providers or technology providers who are trying to do the same for their customers, and we back-end all their data analytics for HR. My role in the organization is as the founder of the business and the primary architect of the solution, and my team is scattered throughout the United States and Europe, and we've been in business since 2006.
Great. I may have slightly misled you during the pre-opening part of the show. Crystal, are you on the line?
I am. It's so
are
great
you
to
gonna,
be here.
Hey,
there she is.
Andrew and I were just kicking off the show, and we hadn't really been connected in the past, so we were going to use this opportunity to get to know each other. But he was booked by Crystal, and so you want to talk big data, because that's more up your alley than mine anyway. So why don't you jump in, Crystal? Andrew just got done
You
can roll with whatever you guys want to talk about.
Oh, I think that's perfect. But you should absolutely join in the conversation, because, you know, I'm going to say that data is probably still relevant about unionized workforces. I'm thinking there's probably data that comes out of that and that we need to pay attention to. Andrew, yes, no, maybe?
Yes, there's no question. Data is relevant everywhere, but definitely in the workforce, no question.
Yeah. I'll jump in as it's appropriate, but take it over, Crystal.
Well, Andrew, it's so great to be able to chat with you, and I know that we had a ton of fun picking through some topics in San Diego earlier this year. So let's start out with this. Big data is everywhere, and it's almost become a buzzword. How relevant is this to today's human resources professional and recruiting professional, and how do they start to wrap their minds around the fact that it may already be something they're using?
Well, I think that is actually one of the biggest issues that we've got, is that people say things like, we need to use big data, we got to get big data. I think we can let's dismiss the fact that there's only a handful of people in the HR space who really, you know, understand what big data is, and I'm not going to do a lecture on what it is. But we outsourced technology in HR more than 10 years ago to a series of vendors and information technology providers, where the majority of the work that HR does is resident inside HRIS, ATS, CRM, social media, payroll systems, and so on. So we've been sitting on data for a long time. What we haven't necessarily been doing, Crystal, is using that data in a way to make decisions and effectively manage our teams regularly. We've been doing it sporadically. And now what we're seeing is, oh, wow, if we look at this data, if we really made sure it was clean, if we really made sure we look at it, use it, we can make decisions very differently. And I think that's really what we're seeing in the market. People are just calling it big data in HR. It's, in a lot of cases, little data first.
Right. I was going to say, so really what they think is big data is actually little data. Maybe you could ping around that. You could help us kind of create that distinction between what truly big data is and little data is. But first, I want to ping on something that you said about clean data, which, mm-hmm. I mean, frankly, does data get dirty?
Data gets very dirty, and what is dirty data? Dirty data basically means that you've got information that's going into fields on a screen, right? And sometimes those fields are filled out with the wrong data, or the system was set up to accept data that's improper, or it's missing data. And what ends up happening is as you and then in some cases when we enter the data, it's wrong, but then it's in the wrong format. So when you try to use outputs, you've got error in that data. And that's what dirty data is. It's just not – it just has lots of error in it, which makes decisions harder. This problem compounds itself because now we want to take this dirty data over here – and we want to combine it with three other sources of data that we have, which also could be dirty, and make sense of all four. And that just becomes a big hot mess, right? It's basically, you know, you add water and dirt, you're just going to get mud. And that's what we've got. We've been muddying our data for so long that when we have, if you don't try to be have a lot of integrity in how you enter the data and making sure that it's valuable and right, it's tough to make decisions because you have a lot of error in there. Make sense?
It totally does. Sorry, I had you on mute for a second, but it totally makes sense to me. So now that we understand that there is dirty data and that we can get it clean, what's really the difference between big data and little data, and where should HR be focused in HR recruiting? Where should they focus in?
Well, let's first start on, first getting a hold of little data, right? So let's just classify little data that if you can kind of manage it in a spreadsheet and it's not really taxing, let's just call that little data. That's an easy thing to do, right? If I can throw it together and then, you know, have it on a couple of spreadsheets and do some pivot tables and kind of make some charts and then create into like a PowerPoint or I can push it into like a report and kind of make it fancy, let's just call that little data because that means that your volume is small enough to fit on a spreadsheet, right, or a series of spreadsheets.
Right.
That means also that you don't have a lot of variety in your data, which is the second qualification of big data, because if you had a lot of variety, pulling it together on a spreadsheet and doing a pivot table wouldn't be really easy. You don't have, you know, so you don't have the volume, you don't have the variety, you know, and then, you know, you don't have this velocity. If I'm managing things in spreadsheets, that means I can stop and do stuff, and take the data, drop it into a spreadsheet at a frequency that's controlled by a human, and you can't do that with big data. Big data is GPS data coming in from a truck, telling its location on a regular basis, or telecommunication outputs, or, you know, or even ATS data that changes every 10 minutes, where we move from one candidate pool to another and people are moving through staging. We can't really do that with human intervention. You need to have technology feed into systems. And if you're doing everything in spreadsheets, I think you can master that little data first and say, is this data clean? Can we look at it? Can we make sense of it? Once you're kind of there, then all of a sudden increasing the variety, increasing its velocity, right? How fast you look at it, you know, and increasing its volume to where you'd be breaking spreadsheets, well, then all of a sudden you're starting to play in the big data game.
That makes sense. So, okay, so HR and recruitment should focus in on little data first, not just because it's easier to manage, but also because it's probably a little more actionable, or at least actionable quickly. Yes? No?
Yes, you should focus on little data first, but you should also focus on it so you make sure it's not dirty.
Yeah.
It's easier to clean up little data than it is big data. If you have to clean big data, you're talking about algorithms and automated cleaning and quality checks and data quality that have their own set of reports and their own set of corrective actions that automate. Most organizations, you know, when we work with them, you know, they're like, well, we have data quality reports that we're managing for you. They're like, what's a data quality report? We're like, yeah, we know you don't understand what a data quality report is, but we need to have them. You're sending us so much data. We need to make sure that you're not putting personal information in a place that you shouldn't. Things like that.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, you got to get your little data clean, and then you can start kind of focusing on some bigger data stuff.
So I can see how it would certainly aid in compliance. But, you know, I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with people where they're like, yeah, we hear about this big data thing, and we're probably, you know, maybe interested in it, but where would we start? They just don't understand the data application, and I think this is probably a supposition that's going to get me in trouble. But I surmise it's because HR still isn't making a lot of data-driven decisions. A lot of HR departments, using generalization, still make a lot of emotionally-based or just trigger-pull decisions without supporting facts, right, supporting data. So if they wanted to change that and become a more data-driven organization, where's a good place to start?
If you really want to become data-driven, and your broad brushstroke generalization, I think, is relatively accurate, right? There's decisions that are made, and maybe they're not necessarily emotional, but I would say in a lot of cases they're without linkage to financials, and that's the best place to start. The best place to start is saying, okay, we have data in HR. How do we concretely link it back to costs, our financials, our growth? And that means you're going to have to sit down with CFO and other members of the finance team and start having a real conversation around transparency. And, you know, and Crystal, I'll make an example. The actual concept of headcount, right, was designed to kind of lock HR out of the finance office. Right now, instead of using headcount as a way to understand our business, we can just go ahead and find out how much we're spending on payroll and on resources and on third-party vendors. We have those numbers. They're readily available.
Right.
But instead, we go ahead, we say to HR, I'm not going to tell you exactly how much we're spending, but you can go around and count out how many people we have working for us and then use an average to figure out if that's okay. So,
which makes no real sense when you think about it, because that doesn't tie, I mean, headcount, it doesn't tie it to things like productivity and business output. So I've never really understood that.
Right. And so it was an industrial manufacturing shortcut to say, do we have too many people on the floor versus our budget? And the easiest way was to say, oh, everybody's earning X dollars per hour. How many people are on the floor right now? Count them up. And we would say, oh, wow, we've got to cut 5%, right? That's how headcount kind of started, because we didn't have the mechanics to go ahead and quickly add up the salaries and the insurance and everything else related to the people. Well, we have that now. But for whatever reason, HR and finance, in some instances, are completely in sync, and headcount's kind of been killed, right? But in other organizations, headcount, as an example, is so prevalent that this is why when we work with companies, we say, can we go ahead and do cost per hire for you, or at least get your costs associated with recruiting? It takes that head of recruiting a lot to get the cost center information and the financial information. They never had approval to ask for it or never did ask for it, or when they do ask for it, the CFOs and the heads of finance say, well, why do you need this information all of a sudden, right? And that's where we need to get started with HR, with trying to make decisions based on data. Start in your business, about business, and you're going to have to go get cost to do so.
That's interesting. So, Michael, what, you know, listening in so far, you've said yourself, this isn't your area of expertise, but it's probably not for the average HR person as well. So what's your take on what you're hearing so far?
So, I have this old blog post somewhere that I wrote about big data, and what I said was that whenever I hear the term big data, it always sounds like a reference to a bad Star Trek character, sort of like real data's bad evil brother or something, although I know that was lore. I think that big data scares, math-averse HR people like myself. I'm not great with spreadsheets. I'm not, so doing it is a thing that is not a specialty for a lot of us, Adam. But it's something that I think more and more HR people are turning to. You know, it's kind of like statistics when you're in grad school for my brain is fried from my conference. Sorry. For people who are literary arts students, they have to take statistics, but they don't know how to do it. So what you learn is how to use it, right? What I found in my own personal space was I worked for a really large company, and we had a whole department that did nothing but business analytics. You still had to tell them what they wanted, but if you could give them all the variables, they could come up with and crunch numbers and come up with correlations to almost anything. I'm at the opposite end of the spectrum in the job I'm in now, in that I have tons of data, but only myself and an administrative assistant to process it and break it down. So the value of the data is really variable. It sounds like you work. That's obviously your business, is to help people sort it out. But how do you help people at the small end scale? How do you help them figure that out, or do you just get paid to do that?
It's get paid to do that. It's funny. So yes, we get paid to do that because it's not a charity. But
no, I don't mean that. No. I didn't mean it that way. No, I meant, or does somebody just buy the service and just kind of hand it over to you and
the
reports?
No. Yeah, we need to advise organizations. The way that we relate to our customers is very similar to a way that a financial advisor would relate to you personally about your finances, right? We're the ones tracking the trends and the markets, and then we're saying, hey, you probably need to kill those bonds and that real estate because things are tanking over here or they're better over here. So let's sell those assets and move our stuff over here. That's what we're doing with our customers, right? We're kind of hooking them in, and we're watching the trend lines. We're watching the reporting, and then we're advising them on things they need to do. But that conversation, Michael, has to start with what's important to your business.
Right.
And so if I'm with an industrial manufacturing organization and we're talking about what's important, I know out of the gate that quality and safety are absolutely paramount to the success of that business. No question. Right? They want a good,
strong product.
Right? And they want to keep their people safe. And so we start asking questions around, okay, HR, you want to make an impact in your business. Let's take a look at do you have access to your OSHA recordables? Do you have access to, how you do safety, how quality audits are getting done, those types of things? And they said, maybe. And we say, okay, well, if safety is so important to you, and it is, then when we do talent acquisition for safety, we should understand how those people are going to reduce OSHA recordables, how they are going to use the training that you have to install, how they're going to relate to quality. And we're going to have to watch all – we have the ability to actually watch those numbers get better or worse, unfortunately, based on the hires that you have, based on what you're training, all those things. And when you start talking that way to an HR leader, they get excited. They're
right.
Like, we can actually impact the business directly? Yes.
Well, a thing that many HR people have complained about for years. Let me do a quick reset, Andrew and Crystal.
Sure.
This is Mike Vandervoort. It's May 1st. We're on Drive Through HR. Our guest is Andrew Gadomski from Aspen Advisors. and our, my co-host today, which is always rare and charming, is Crystal Miller, phoning in from an unknown remote location. Crystal, I'm actually losing my voice. I thought I was rebounding, but I'm actually going downhill here. So I'm going to throw it back to you, and then I'll just do the wrap at the end, okay?
Totally works. I'm stuffy, so we're quite the pair. Thank you, Andrew, for hanging in there with us.
No problem.
All right, so let's pivot a little bit. For those of us who are data geeks, or wanting to be more data-driven geeks, there's some really fabulous and fascinating things that can be done with the data that we are getting around the lines of predictive analytics. And you're starting to see companies move up, large enterprise companies, move more in the direction of using the recruitment, past recruitment data and that they have, marrying that with the employment data that they have in terms of productivity and tenure and pay scale and even just sentiment to create predictive models around hiring. Not many, but some. Are you doing anything interesting like that? And if so, what would be the benefit for a company to get into that line of thinking or start moving down that road? Or should they?
Well, let's talk about something that we're doing, and I know it's a topic that has gotten a tremendous amount of press over the last couple of years. So let's talk about pay inequality. So we take ATS data, HRIS data, payroll data, and we have that congealing inside our platform. Now, at the same time, we can also visualize 75,000, 100,000, 300,000 people on one screen, all hierarchied, how they relate to each other. But we can also go ahead, because we have all this data, we can actually visualize who's getting paid what's their compensation ratio to each other, and where does inequality exist. So I can put that on one screen and say, oh, here's the gender breakdown, and here are the people who are underpaid versus their gender counterparts. That's pretty interesting, right? So that's a report, right? It might be living and breathing. It might be changing every day, but it's a snapshot. Using predictive analytics or using actions, you could go ahead and say, oh, when a job opens up, and we go ahead and pick that up offline, online, somebody can get an alert saying, oh, this IT position at this job grade, we actually have an opportunity to hire this type of person because we're out of sync. Now, that's not vaporware, Crystal. That's happening today, right? Now the question is, oh, my gosh, we don't know what to do with that information, right? Because now all of a sudden, excuse the example, what if we knew that we had people at this job grade, we didn't have enough women in that role? Now all of a sudden, are we really hunting particularly for someone who's, for someone female to take the role? Well, there's all kinds of legal issues associated with how we do that, why we do that, how that gets communicated, all kinds of things, right? So the information is there for us to do analytics and for us to take action. Some of the things that are out there that are blocking progress are really legislation, right, or a misunderstanding or general understanding of what to do with the information, right? And so if I was able to show somebody, here's all your inequality, go ahead and we can automate payroll to automatically change next week. Do you want to do that? You know, people are saying, they're like, you got to be kidding me. You want to automate payroll adjustments based on gender, based on tenure, based on performance? Yeah, we can do that. That's blowing people's minds right now, right? And HR is not, we are not used to that. We are not ready, but that's where the data is. It's so far ahead of the culture that's where we're going, Crystal, is we're moving in a way where the data is going to allow us not necessarily to just make decisions, but actually to make corrective action automatically.
And I love that. I think that's a fantastic it's a fantastic movement and I guess direction that we're heading. It's exciting for me, and I'm sure for you and many others. The question just becomes, if HR is not currently ready for it from a standpoint of, like, it's blowing their minds, how do we get ourselves ready? You know, like, how do we change that around to where we're ready for it? And then how do we present that business case to our executives? Or are they already ready for it and we're the ones lagging behind?
I think that some of the executive teams are actually ready for this, and they can see this, they see this coming, or they're understanding it, and so they're taking the actions they need to do to kind of check the boxes, right? They're starting to think differently about, okay, what's our risk? You know, we're getting questions that are the right questions. Help us understand our risk. Help us understand our legal position. Where are we out of compliance? How do we take initial corrective action? So there's a lot of there is a lot of that going on where people are asking the right go-forward questions. I think we are hearing a bit of the, well, we just don't do that here, or that would never work here, or. And that's where we just have to use more traditional change management practices to quite honestly call BS on those companies and say, you know, the change is coming, we're going to have to do it. Let's talk about how much change we can do now versus later. Who are the people we need to get an ear on? Who are the influencers? How are we going to do it top down, bottom up? So you can't deny some of these things. Denying some of these changes is like denying mobile and its usage. It's kind of ridiculous.
Fair enough. I think Michael's got one more question for you.
Andrew. I work in employee relations, right? Which is, you know, is a lot different than recruiting. How do you manage and measure how your current employees feel in the workplace, amongst many other things, right? And you know, a lot of companies do employee opinion surveys or attitude surveys or whatever you want to refer to them by, and that alone generates an entire universe of data, which is just one of many. Kind of data points you can measure in that realm. Do you do any work in that area? And if you do, what kind of stuff, you know, do you look at there or that with employers, or are you pretty much just in the recruitment end?
No, we do. Engagement data, right, which is in a lot of cases survey or sentiment oriented, is something that we do quite a bit of. And we do it both for employees as much as we do it for potential employees. Right, so we do it for applicants, we do it for the candidates, or the candidate experience, and we have a series of tools that, you know, engagement surveys are not a new thing, Michael.
Right.
Okay, the problem is that their velocity is weak. Doing it once a year and then taking 3 months to find out how you did when you started 12 months ago, and then going to the population and saying, okay, this is what you said, and now we're going to go ahead and make changes over the next 6 to 12 months is as ridiculous as it sounds, right? We, you know, when people are checking their bank account using an app and they can understand how much money they have in the account this second, a business telling them that thanks for filling out a survey a year ago, we'll get back to you in 6 months, is an insult. So what we do is we offer engagement data services that actually allow companies to pulse their employees on a daily basis. And there's a big movement around that, by the way,
right,
where companies are using tools to kind of get feedback on a regular basis, sometimes confidentially, sometimes with a little bit more transparency.
I apologize. We're down the last 5 seconds. It was great having you on. Thanks for being on Drive Through HR, and we'll have to get you on again. Sorry to cut you off in the middle of your answer.
No problem. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.